Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, online fitness coach, nutritionist, and three-time best-selling author here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is a long overdue round two, with one of my personal favorites, one of my personal favorite people, but also one of my personal favorite Instagram pages, Daniel Davey. In August 2020, we did episode 292, Daniel Davey on owning your nutrition, the importance of dietary goals, and exploring your behavior around food. In today's podcast, we talk about his new book, Eat Up, The Next Level, and on how you can simplify your nutrition, avoid diet overcomplication, and learning to eat out without guilt. For those of you unfamiliar with Daniel or who missed the first episode, he's a performance nutritionist. He received his degree in science from University College Dublin and holds a master's in nutrition, physical activity and public health from the University of Bristol. He has worked with some of the top teams in Ireland, from the Dublin Footballers, who won multiple All-Irelands, the Leinster rugby team, and is one of the top performance nutritionists in the country, helping athletes from all over the world improve their performance and move to the next level. In today's podcast, we bring it back to simplifying nutrition with whole real food. So bridging that gap between what the professionals do and athletes do and how you can use it to lower your body fat, building muscle tissue, and just improve your overall energy levels and body composition. We also talk about recipe solutions for meals throughout the day, your breakfast, your lunch, your dinner, building confidence around your food choices, healing your food relationship, and surviving social expectations with eating out for those of you who struggle with that. Lessons he learned from the top pro athletes when it comes to nutrition and how it applies to the average person, and also the advanced research or the new research that's coming out around injury and physical rehabilitation. So there's so much we've unpacked in today's podcast that's just a little bit of a snippet. So without further ado, here is Daniel Davey on simplifying nutrition, avoiding diet overcomplication, and learning to eat out without guilt. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today for round two, a long overdue round two, even though it was 2020. It doesn't feel like that long ago since we did the first round. Daniel Davey, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks very much. I feel like we got into it in that last chat. You never know where these conversations navigate to, but always a privilege.
I love it. Mate, one of the things that connected really heavily off the back of the last podcast, and I know in the new book, Eat Up, The Next Level, you talk about it in there, but owning your nutrition is something that people are like, oh, that's actually a really obvious concept that I never thought about. And I love the way that Daniel put it. That was my main feedback from people off the back of it, because we talked about how nutrition really is just different fundamentals that you need to apply, but ultimately it's about owning what you're eating, owning what you're doing, and being consistent with it. But before we get into anything with the nutrition side, well, actually it's kind of an unintentional segue, talk about the new book, Eat Up, The Next Level. You've been working on this, it's great. We're going to be unpacking some of the beginning of this because there's a lot of recipes in there as well, but definitely some of the core content I'm going to be unpacking as we go through. But talk to us about where the idea came from and what was the kind of thought process behind the new one.
In very practical terms, I spoke to the editors and the publishing company after the first book, and they were keen for me to write a second book because the first one was a success. And I asked the question, how do people make sure that their second book is a success? And the feedback is, and what you're told is that, well, you can never guarantee that success, but you do need to give it attention and you need to listen to your audience. And I was hoping for more. You know, I was hoping that there was some sort of brainstorming process that you go through. But as the months went by, because it takes months, and you've written three books?
I've written four, three of the bestsellers. Yeah, I've been lucky with it. Yeah.
Wow. One thing that I know is that the content has to be really good. It's not just luck. But they said, listen, see what the conversations are like that you're having with people. And that's what I did. Obviously, during that last two-year period, I was working in elite sport and nutrition for immunity, nutrition protocols around injury was something where I felt there's a huge opportunity here to talk about this. And I guess the next major part of my own evolution and practice and conversations that I have with people is around mindset. It's around self-talk. It's around what are the things that are really influencing your decisions underneath? So I started to delve into that a lot more, and this is what's informed the book, and this is what I guess, you know, you go through different phases in life. This is something that is really, really exciting me now with the conversations I'm having with people.
Daniel, with that, I'm very curious because you're obviously such an expert in nutrition, and in the separate introduction, I've gone through everything that you do and just reminding people of what we talked about in the last podcast. But you've been working very much with specialist sport for your early part of your career, and now there's a lot more kind of a commercial appeal working with the general population, particularly the books, hence the success of them, and just your message online. Your Instagram page is fantastic. But I'm very curious, because of the way that your life has changed in terms of the way you've navigated your business now, with nutrition, is there anything that you think now that you've changed your mind about since you started first? And again, there's always going to be a little bit of selection bias, I'm sure, because it was very high-end performers you were working with, and now it's more commercial mixed in with those performers. But is there anything with nutrition that you've changed your mind about in recent years?
You know, I feel like your mind evolves, and your perspective probably changes in phases of time. And I would say when I started as a practitioner, it was very heavy on information and knowledge, and it was about cooking, and it was the culture of cooking and the impact of that and realizing the value of that. But then you kind of, as time goes on, you realize, just I suppose on a, again, through experience, that you can have all of the skills in the world, but if you're not happy, if you're not speaking to yourself, if you don't have confidence in the goals that you're trying to achieve, and if there's a huge amount of stress or anxiety, or if you don't realize what's driving your decisions, that those skills are redundant. So that's what it's about, putting that complete picture together that you realize is so incredibly complicated and so complex. And so what I wanted to delve into, and what I want to delve into an awful lot more, is what are those tools? And what we talked a lot about why, and coming back to the why and why you do things a lot. Whereas now I've realized how that people need a clear vision on what they're working towards. And that vision will help to pull people towards that as almost like an extra layer of energy and motivation, and rather than always focusing on the nitty gritty of nutrition. So really, I suppose what I'm getting around to saying is that you have to really understand the person, and you have to understand where they're at in their life, their skills, their knowledge, and how to prioritize. That's so fundamental.
With the nitty gritty, and I see this, and I think it's probably the same with your social media, because you're quite active on social media, replying to DMs, etc. The nitty gritty, where people, it's what I call on podcasts and books, that they're focusing on the wrong thing, or that they're going too deep on the wrong area, and that's just getting tied down in the weeds. When it comes to nutrition, Daniel, what do you think is, and this is a Pandora's box of a question, I know, but what's an area that you see that people generally overcomplicate?
I think that people overcomplicate calories. I think people overcomplicate macros. Like, one of the things about the first book that I was happy that I did, because it was an extra layer of information, but I included macronutrients. And sometimes I think I shouldn't have, because I get messages from people. I got a message last night from somebody who has made the overnight oats, and the nutrition information didn't match the information that I had listed in my book. And I had all of these thoughts in my head. What does it really matter? It's a really great breakfast. Think about the practical solution that you're providing yourself. I had all of these other things, but they were just obsessed about it not matching. And I said, did you just double check that that's actually for two? There's two portions in that recipe. And they hadn't. And that was the main reason. But what I'm trying to provide are recipe solutions. And the information is to help inform you how you're meeting your nutrition needs with it, not to obsess about the details of it. So that is just one tiny example of, of course you want people to be interested and engaged, but the obsessive nature that we can see in society now around nutrition is more damaging than anything else.
Why do you think there's been this movement towards an obsessive nature? Now, maybe I'm completely misreading it and maybe it was always there and it just wasn't in my space, but I've definitely seen in the last few years people getting very obsessive with things like macros, as you've said. Where do you think, and again, I know this is 100% opinion based on your own area of expertise, but why do you think there's been that move towards obsession in recent years?
Well, I suppose that it probably is a part of human nature somewhere and probably has been there and developed in different ways in the past. But now, because we have access to information and because it's so front and center in everything, in the way the world works with media, I think it's driven. Is it driven with by what underpins it? I'm trying to go a couple of layers deeper to say, is it driven by insecurity? Is it driven by lack of confidence? You know, is it a confidence thing where people are trying to build confidence in knowing the information around something, and if they've got more confidence in the information, then achieving their goals is going to feel more likely? Because I think that the biggest thing that when I'm working with somebody, there's this constant question of, but how will I know, you know? And I try to explain that food is not supposed to be about knowing every detail. It's supposed to be about the experience, and it's supposed to be about the... This sounds like something I would never listen to myself talk like this 20 years ago, but it is about how it makes you feel. Mm. And that's not wishy-washy. That's how satiated, how full, what does your energy levels feel like? Besides looking at the data and going, well, at least the data is right. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
So I think it's probably underpinned by that sense of uncertainty that people have in their own minds.
Yeah, I love that. I've thought about that because I've seen that trend towards that obsessive nature, towards calories, towards macros. And I'm so hesitant because, very similar to you, evidence-backed approach, when I'm putting things out there, I like to have some support with what I'm saying. But ultimately, it does come down to, well, how is the food making you feel? Like, food is fuel at the end of the day. And I think that mindset approach to it can be really, really helpful. With building confidence around information and people, how will I know? I was laughing, for those of you who aren't watching the video and just listening to the podcast, I was laughing because I get that all the time as well, where people say, well, how will I know this is going to work? What's your answer to that? I have my reply, but I'm very curious. Mm-hmm. What do you say when people ask that?
Well, I suppose going back to the question and what's driving it, what I try and do is to build confidence in practice. And what you have to do, you have to allow for trial and error, and you have to allow people the freedom of exploration. So what I do when I'm working with people is, okay, so what are we working on and what are we working towards? What are the priority areas that we need to look at? So nutrition comes into it. it's mainly about mindset and how we're, and your lifestyle, how you're living your life, and as we've talked about confidence. But you do need some nutrition information to apply. So if it is protein for breakfast, okay, well, where can we get 20 grams of protein? And where, give me five examples of high protein foods. Now give me three breakfast options that you can make that are realistic based on the life that that you live. Well, what's the nutrition information associated with that yogurt and fruit, or that overnight oats, or that scrambled eggs and toast? How many eggs is it? And let's deal with that first. You know, let's deal with that individual meal, and let's see, does that give you your 30 grams of protein, which if you multiply that out over four meals over the course of the day will get you to the 150 or whatever the 200 grams that you're targeting. And that builds confidence, and that's how you begin to know. But I just tell you one very quick story about a guy that I worked with throughout COVID. And his big challenge was his lunch. And he had 7 kilos that he wanted to drop. And he didn't know where to start. And we talked about his typical day. And his food and his food choices weren't bad. But there was no real provision of, in his workplace, there was no real provision of a lunch that was balanced with fiber and protein, healthy fats and slow digesting carbohydrates, something that worked well for him. And he just wasn't in the practice of bringing a lunch. And what was happening was he was coming home from work. Often he would skip lunch because he didn't want to choose something that was provided, or he didn't have something sufficient with him. And he came home starving. And it did not matter what his knowledge was or what he was planning on having. He would overeat even before he had his dinner. And this was a pattern that established over time. The only thing that I asked him to work on was his lunch options and routines and practices that would allow him to have a lunch option. So what were the meals that would box well, or that he could bring? What was his go-to, like his plan B and C if that didn't work? What were the things that he could have that were under his desk that would tie him over? What was every single aspect of it? It's the only thing he did. And I said, let's not even worry about the calculations or the macros or anything else. Let's just focus on that practice. And this is the truth. He lost 5 kilos. He lost 5 kilos in, I think it was about a 3 month period. And that was the only, and then we moved on. You know, and then we move on to the next area. So it's a very long-winded answer. But we don't need to get so hung up in the detail around the nutrition information. We need to focus on what the priority is within our behaviors and our practices.
I love that. I love that story, because it shows that one small change can have a positive compound effect everywhere else, because he was obviously not overeating now. He was feeling more satiated, and it was leading to more positive compounded choices over time. And I love that simplifying nutrition approach, similar to the owning your nutrition. I think simplifying it is something that hopefully will take more of a trend. Again, your content, I try and do it on the podcast as well, sometimes successfully, sometimes unsuccessfully, depending on who I'm speaking to. But I think today we're definitely getting that simplified nutrition, fuel your body. And the book goes through, so you have it broken up. I have it here in front of me. You've got all the recipes in it, and there's some great recipes in here that I'm going to be trying. I steal your recipes from Instagram anyway, so like, I've got, if you go through my saved that's thing on Instagram, I've got a load of that Davey Nutrition one saved. But you have the first section of it talking a lot about that food foundation, the science of optimal performance, and a lot of the mindset stuff in there. With your nutrition lessons, and again, we can go in a whole host of different directions here, but I loved and particularly loved the nutrition lessons that you have, because it's simplifying it down. Can you pick one or two of your favorite nutrition lessons that you think everybody, from the beginner to the advanced person who geeks out in nutrition like me, should consider when it comes to things to know about nutrition with your personal lessons?
There's a whole section on I always surprise myself about the practicalities around how we approach our home is so important. And, you know, things having their place is an awful, it's such a small thing. But if you know where things are, and you have an area for dry ingredients, you've got the spices that you know that you use regularly, and it's about having a systemized approach to you achieving your consistency in your health and within your practices. But if you have a system, you know, if you have a space for your waste you know, you've got your countertop caddy for your organic waste, and you know where everything fits. You've got a good sharp knife. You have the tools and the things that are required in your home to execute the preparation of food. That takes, we had a great conversation around this, around mindset and systems and workload before we started the podcast. It's the same thing. It's applying an effective system that you know can be effective for you to produce meals and produce what you want to achieve efficiently that doesn't cause stress. So that's a key part of it. The sharing element of food, and you just even mentioned there about just saving the recipes. Like, I think that food should be about connection. I think food should be about sharing, and whether the connection element within our environments and the social elements, like even having friends around for food, cooking with your family, and having time points in the day where you actually can cook or eat together. I mean, those are the type of things that are very practical, that are outside of all of the other things that we don't think enough about.
I have a follow-on question here. As somebody that definitely had large portions of my life, probably up until my late 20s, disordered eating patterns, one of the reasons I talk so much about food relationship, I know you have a section in the book on it, is because it was something I struggled with when I was competing in bodybuilding, fitness modeling shows. I was on the high end of disordered eating. I would not go out to restaurants because I didn't know what they'd have on the menu. I would not go out to restaurants because I couldn't calculate what was on the food plan. And one of the things I love doing with people now is showing them, well, you can go and have your family meal, go out for that restaurant, have it as a free meal, or, you know, clock it into your MyFitnessPal. If you're prepping for something, it's totally up to you and what causes less stress in your life. But from your experience, Daniel, that eating together, is that something that, because you obviously played at a very high level of sport, I know GAA, and then you've been working with the Dublin team, the rugby teams, all these different sports, but with your history of eating personally, did you always find it easy to just eat out, go to the restaurants, have that? Or is that something that you're laughing as I'm saying it, so I'm curious what direction you're going to go in it, if that's something you ever struggled with, or is that something that's just always been fine with you and you just recommend to people?
I feel like you went to the very heart of something that I've shared in the book and that I feel really strongly about, because without sounding too dramatic, there was periods in my life where I tried to live up to what I thought were other people's expectations of me with my nutrition. The decisions were not for me. They were for those around me who I wanted to inspire and who I wanted to say, this is the way that this is the discipline and this is the focus and this is the intent that I have. And I want you to see that through how I live and how I approach my food. The only person that really suffered because of that was me. You know, those constraints, they impacted me and my experience of food and my experience. I missed out in those social situations because I only ordered what I thought was healthy on the menu and skipped desserts. And I talk about it in the book because once I started to shift that, and once I started to become more relatable in my own decisions and more like how you should be in enjoying those moments, I connected far better with people around me, and I connected far better with athletes that I worked with. So there's two kind of very distinct things here. There's my experience and my path and getting to know myself and actually getting to know, hold on a second here, I can do both. Most of the time I can make really good decisions, but the rare occasions I'm in those social situations or I'm out and I should be enjoying my food, I should be doing that for me, not trying to live a certain way that I think other people expect me to. And then there's the other part where the social part of eating, there's so much expectation, I suppose, around food now and the conversations around food. And then when I was out and about, I didn't want it always to come back to well, how much protein is there, or are you eating that? Or, but over time, that actually did phase out, and it became much more about the conversations that we have as people. And that's what I really want to emphasize. If we can think about food in the most positive light, it'll begin to have a more positive impact on us and our health and our well-being. That it should be about reducing stress, not adding to stress.
I love that. That's such a wonderful way to put it. And I'm very curious, as someone that, again, similar to what I asked you, it's mirroring back to me in terms of experience. But how did you go from zero to one with that? And I asked that very much in relation to those who were, because we still have a chunk of people who listen to this podcast who won't have the best relationship with food, or will struggle with whatever their version of guilt, shame, spirals or cycles are around food. What was your zero to one when it came to being more relaxed with nearly an 80-20 approach or a 90-10 approach to your nutrition? Just because there's a lot of people who struggle to get from that zero to one. They actually can go from figurative one to 10 and heal that relationship once they've got off the ground. But actually getting started with that is very difficult from my experience. What did you do?
What I did, I think there's two parts again to it. I think there's a maturity that comes over time, more information from the right sources, and beginning to spend more time around, I suppose, people with that kind of broader perspective, and seeing how, you know, you are influenced by those around you, and seeing how, hold on a second, you can be lean and you can be healthy and you can enjoy your food. And I want to go back to, I suppose, two really key points. And one was my friend, one of my best friends, Brendan Egan. He used to really challenge me on some of my, should I call them obsessive tendencies? Like, they're borderline obsessive, where when I went through my really low carb phase and I was, you know, saying this was the only way to be lean, this is 10 years ago now or longer. And he said, are you sure? And I said, yeah, I'm sure. And he said, well, have you tested it? And I said, no, I have tested, but I know. He said, you can't know. He's a scientist. So I tested it. I went for a completely different approach, and I let the reins go a lot just to test it. My weight didn't change and I probably got leaner. You know, I was operating at a higher intensity. I was feeling better. My recovery was better from training. And that was kind of one. I was like, well, hold on a second. If I've got that part wrong, maybe there's other things that I've got wrong. So that was on a kind of on a science point, and I started to read more and start to get a better understanding of physiology. And I needed that understanding. So sometimes the way that people need that reassurance from, okay, well, track for one day to give yourself that reassurance, but let's build towards better practice and behaviors and habits. And the other thing that really struck me was I had a couple of holidays. I spent some time in the south of France. I spent some time in Italy. And I realized, I mean, we're talking about the Mediterranean diet for, I don't know, 30 years longer, and it's, you know, its impact on risk factors for disease and a whole way of eating for longevity. And I started to look at what they were eating, and it was like, you know, they're eating pain au chocolat and croissants, and they're this dessert with most meals. And I go, what the hell? But the more you're immersed in it, you realize it's an attitude towards food. And of course, it's about portions, but it's not about obsession. You know, the value of what they're eating isn't better. We haven't got better access to food, but it was their whole approach. It was slow. It was thoughtful. It was considered. It was about the senses. It was about the experience. It wasn't like, when I think about pasta, I think about at least half the bag. They're talking about, you know, it's two small plates, and they're having their vegetables and their cheeses, and everything was proportional. And it's just a completely different way. And I began to put it all together over time. But 0 to 1, I didn't answer that question, and it took me too long to say it's about a conversation. And I think it's really hard to do it on your own. I think you need to speak to somebody about it to go from 0 to 1 to prioritize.
There's so much value in that too, in terms of how you got to where you got, in terms of where the experiences came from and how it impacted the way you saw it. But that's what definitely we try and do with this podcast. It's kind of an awakening. If something penny drops, or an aha moment where you go, oh, actually, I don't need to be meticulous and count every morsel of food that enters my mouth. I can take it from a different perspective. Now, I'm all for, depending on your starting point, I have a bias because I had an issue towards food relationship and disordered eating. So I don't track any of my calories, any of my macros. But there's other people who find that that works for them. They're very militant with food. They like knowing what's going into their body. They might have aspirations to be a professional athlete. And that's fine too. It's not that either of these things are right or wrong. It's, well, what's your circumstance and what's serving you and what's supporting you? And just to know that there's different perspectives out there, particularly if you're similar to me or Daniel, where you didn't have that healthiest of relationship with food, it's important to bring it back to it. And there's a few things in the book that I want to unpack, just because...
Can I share one very, very quick thing with you? And I think it's worth sharing. So I've worked in professional sport for 10 years. And... we both in GA and rugby, endurance sports, hockey, you know, motorsport. I've worked in a multitude of different sports at the highest level. Teams have won All-Irelands, teams have won European Champions Cups. You know, I've been very fortunate of being a part of those environments. So I never had a program in all of my time which focused on tracking calories and macros. Never. There was individual periods of time where somebody needed to put on lean mass or needed to drop body fat. And I felt that there was an education component to that, where an athlete could benefit from a food diary, MyFitnessPal, or using some form of tracking periodically to help them better understand where energy came from. But by and large, it was about habits, and it was about routines and structure and planning and organization and understanding what worked well for you around your training. And I think that's really important to share, that we're talking about the highest level of performance being achieved with the practices that we're talking about.
I love that. I'm so glad you shared that, because instantly even my brain will go to high level sport. Now, I probably have a little bit of a bias because I was a competitive bodybuilder, and you track calories, you track macros in that area. But as high level sport, professional sport, you automatically think that they're doing exactly something different to what amateurs are. But in a lot of cases here, as you said, these are foundational principles that anybody can apply. And I've got a question that kind of builds on that. With your experience of working with those high level athletes, and you are definitely the best person to ask on this because you're talking, as you mentioned, some of the top teams in their sports. What are some of the lessons that you learned from working with professionals that can have a crossover and apply to the general population when it comes to nutrition?
Well, the number one thing is that they have total clarity on what every week looks like. Like, that doesn't change. So you can say that they know. It's easier to create a template. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not robots. You know, it's not copy and paste. But they have a schedule that they get, usually 3 weeks in advance, that tells them over every day where they're going to be and what they're going to be doing. And then it's very easy to apply principles to that period of time. Is it a performance phase? Is it a muscle building phase? Is it a strength phase? Are you recovering from injury? So depending on what the focus is for that phase, if it's just maintenance of overall energy, well, now we've got so much experience of knowing what works, we need to be really tight on applying those principles for those period of time. And I like, even up to last year, athletes that I would that would have had a huge amount of experience of working in the space of nutrition, they would talk about sitting down on a Sunday and mapping out their week, looking at the meals that they're going to have, looking at the ingredients that they needed for those meals, where they were going to get them, you know, when they were going to cook them, when they were going to prepare them, what they needed for what point. they would still talk about that being one of the most critical things for success. And anybody can do that.
I think that's great advice. As you said, that's not one of these secret sauces. That is something that if you are at the very start of your journey, midway through, or just an avid gym goer, you can plan out your week in advance without being obsessive with it. Like we've said, just having an idea. And fitness or nutrition, apologies, is something that, and again, this is just what I do personally, I like having it, what I call making the right automatic food choice. It just becomes automatic over time. When you build it into a habit, like you're saying, Daniel, for people listening, yes, it's difficult in the beginning, because any change is difficult in the beginning and can be a bit messy in the middle, but is really good at the end and becomes automatic at the end, and you just have to persevere through it. With the book, you talk about the science of optimum performance, and there is a section in there on strategically fueling for competition, the what, why, and when. But you also talk about immune system, and you talked about nutrition for immunity at the top of the podcast, and you have a section in there on, you know, feeding the gut. Out of curiosity, and this is just me completely geeking out because we didn't talk about this before the podcast, what's the area of nutrition that you are most excited about at the minute? Is there any research area? Like for me, I'm obsessed at the minute on perimenopause, on female sport, how their cycle affects nutrition, just because my daughter's 7 now, she's going to be coming into that in the next, you know, several years. And I'm very kind of into that area of nutrition at the minute in terms of the science and the research that's going there. With where you're at in terms of personally expanding your own professional development, what's the area of nutrition you're most excited about at the minute or interested in?
Okay, so let's leave the behavior mindset and that whole approach to aside for a moment. There's probably three key areas that I'm fascinated by. I find nutrition around injury prevention and recovery, absolutely, I find it fascinating. I had a couple of, you talked about key moments or watershed moments a little bit earlier. I had a couple of those in the last 3 years working with athletes where we, with the multidisciplinary team in Leinster, we narrowed some of the recovery times, like the recovery periods for athletes to get back for major games. Now, I know they couldn't have achieved that without an excellent rehabilitation program, an excellent S&C program, but I also know that they couldn't have done it without the right type of nutrition program. So looking at that and placing really clear understanding of the value of, you know, protein, looking at omega-3, looking at collagen, looking at the overall process around recovery from injury, that really excites me. And I think that as, you know, the aging athlete can really benefit from a focus on this. The other thing is, and you mentioned the immunity, the gut is a fascinating one. And yes, I am very interested in how we can improve our gut flora, improve our microbiome. But the truth is that the area, there's still so many things that we don't understand and we don't know. You know, a very simple one, like fiber and adequate fiber is absolutely fundamental for a good digestive system. Prebiotic fiber is critical to feed healthy, good bacteria to support our immune system. But too much of certain fibers for people can cause terrible problems, bloating, flatulence. So that probably leads me on to the third part, and it is bespoke individualization of nutrition. Really looking at what is effective, what are the foods that are effective for different people. And like the fascinating thing for me over the time, like within my own self-discovery around food, is that I actually realized that a higher carbohydrate rather than lower carbohydrate diet is by far more effective for me because of the way I live my life. And I thought, because of all of the initial reading about the control of insulin and control of blood sugar and not having excess carbohydrate because of the risk associated with increased production of our storage of adipose tissue and all this, like all of those things, I thought, okay, this is the way to go. And then you realize, hold on, every person's body is so incredibly unique. And it is that thumbprint around people's nutrition, whether it be their gut health, whether it be what specific goal that they have, or the combination of foods or nutrients, or even nutrition around pregnancy, things like that, that are really, really, really specific to each individual, I really enjoy.
That's so funny you say that. Before we recorded this podcast, I have another GA podcast that I send out to my players with some nutrition stuff, some training stuff on there. And I was talking about, I was the reverse of that with, because I came from that sports nutrition background, and it was high carb, complex carbs, high protein. And I'm the reverse, where I don't need very little carbohydrate to function, but high fat, high protein, I feel amazing cognitively, physically, hormonally. So it's fascinating you said that, because we're on opposite ends of the spectrum with that. And I came at it from, I need more carbs, you know, particularly when I was playing GA. I'm like, I'm playing GA, sports nutrition, complex carbs, where actually there's this kind of sweet spot that you need to experiment and bespoke it to yourself to see what works. I want to pull it back though to the injury rehabilitation, just because that's a really interesting area that, again, another outside my circle of competence, so far outside it my head spins. So I'm very curious from what you've explored and seen with the anti-inflammatory approach or injury. Is it down to an anti-inflammatory approach with the nutrition, or is it something else that's speeding up that recovery? Because I know it's holistic, as you said, the S&C, the rehabilitation and the nutrition, but what's some of the trends you found?
Well, the single biggest thing is that what happens when people get, instinctively, what comes into your mind when somebody gets a bad injury? What do you think happens with the person?
In what context? In what sense?
I'm going to give it away, but how do you think they feel?
Oh, but I know from when I get injured, I have a high end of like not pressing the fuck it button with everything. So that's how I tend to go when I get injured. Again, I'm not sure if it's the same for everybody, but I have to override that.
Yeah, and that's generally how people feel. They feel incredibly disappointed. They think about the time that, you know, they're not going to be training. It's an unbelievable mental challenge. But yet it is the most critical time point that we have to be on top of our nutrition. And what we see in, let's say if it's an immobilized limb or joint and people can't move, it's a dislocated ankle, or it's a bad sprain, or it's a shoulder injury, the 2 week period around that injury, you've got the greatest potential for muscle loss. So large athletes, physically well trained athletes, can lose up to 5 kilos in a very, very short space of time. Now, from all of your experience, how long do you think it takes to build that 5 kilos of lean mass?
In terms of how long it takes to build it initially or to rebuild it after you've lost it?
Even rebuild it after you've lost it.
I found for me personally, now I've got quite good farmer genetics from the west of Ireland, similar to you. So it's normally...
Mightn't be as good as yours.
It's similar. I find if I lost it in 6 weeks and I was out of lifting for 6 weeks, I'd have it put back on in about 3. But I feel I'm probably a bit faster responder than most there from people I've worked with.
That is quick. But generally speaking, if we were to look at the rehabilitation of muscle tissue, you could be looking at 6 weeks to regain what you've lost. Now, what if you, with through nutrition, were able to offset that and to drop the loss of that, or split that even in half? And let's say you only lost 2 kilos of lean tissue from that immobilized joint. Now we're in a completely different position, because ultimately what we're trying to maintain is strength and function. And the quicker we can get back strength and function, the more likely we're going to be out in the field of play or back training again. So there's the nutrition and how that fits in and prioritizing it and the messages associated with it that are critical. So very often the feeling people get is, what's the point?
Yeah.
That results in a complete loss of structure. So it's the maintenance of structure, the maintenance of meals, the maintenance of calories, adequate calories. And then it's not the time to get lean. The message is maintenance. So of course you're going to lose a bit of tone. Of course you're going to lose a little bit of lean. Of course you've got the potential to put on some body fat. But the more you manage that period, the better you have, the better chance. And that's about education and understanding. So yes, then we can start to look at the anti-inflammatory or the management of inflammation. And that will be through the one of the most important anti-inflammatory sources will be omega-3 through the diet, through supplementation. If it's a joint, tendon, bone, where there's some really positive and exciting evidence emerging for collagen, different types of collagen, as long as you're using the right type. And that when I say right type, it's that there's a hydrolyzing, so certain collagens are hydrolyzed to make them more suitable for bone, tendon, or joint, and it's got that specific, so it's not as generic. And then it's looking at your food. So it's high intake of where we can get flavonoids, whether it be dark chocolate and berries, blueberries, cherries, and ginger, turmeric. And it's having lots of those foods present in our diet to not just, we're not looking to eliminate inflammation. We need a certain limit, level of inflammation for that adaptation and for that recovery to happen. But it's the management of that and maintenance of structure. And that's the big thing. And that facilitates, alongside the S&C and rehabilitation program, that will facilitate optimum recovery.
I love that. That's such great advice and something that I've said on the past. I've had Dr. Kevin Stone on the podcast. So he works with a lot of the top NBA stars in terms of Kevin Durant and people along those lines who knee surgeries, shoulder surgeries. And we talked a lot on the podcast about the advancements in sports medicine, peptides, etc., for recovery, which is fascinating. But he also talked about nutrition and training around it and the importance of that structure. Like you said, nearly identical in terms of have your structure. And for me, anytime I got injured, and this is just a piece of advice for people, is I always train around an injury when I can, assuming it's not a spinal injury, anything along those lines. But I broke my foot last year like an idiot, Daniel, playing a feckin' junior B game when they were short numbers in a football
Been
game.
There.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, have you got gear in the car? Then we've only got 14. I was like, yeah, go on. And someone fell on my foot and broke my foot. Fractured my foot, but I trained. I did all my upper body stuff and I had a boot on and I was able to train around it. And that was mostly to keep structure with my training, which helped my nutrition for structure, which helped my head and my mindset and my mental health. So I think doing what you can, like anything is better than nothing when it comes to movement and nutrition, I think.
And just to add to that, what you were also doing was you were maintaining testosterone growth hormone, and you were maintaining a hormonal profile for maintenance of lean tissue. So the signals that were being sent, even around your injury sites, was maintain. You know, it was the signals that were being sent to tissue was, well, we need to stay strong here. There's still a stimulus coming. Whereas most people who get injured, and it's incredibly frustrating, is it's just rest. Whereas the worst thing you can do is nothing. Now, I'm not saying you don't rest the injured limb. I'm not saying you train through pain or anything, but exactly like what you said, if through whatever injury you have, you can speak with a physio, they will tell you to do a rehabilitation program, and you ask them, what can I do? And that has this, like we talked about, that kind of compound effect. It'll help you to keep structure, help you to keep focus, but also physiologically, it's having a really positive impact.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think the way it's moved in recent years, because as soon as I got injured, I'd say within a couple of days, my physio had me doing like the alphabet with my foot to keep that mobility within my foot. Whereas back, I remember dislocating my knee when I was 15 and they locked it in a cast for 8 weeks and there was nothing. You're just looking back now going, no more than the nutrition element. It feels archaic when you look back. Daniel, a long overdue round two, and I could talk to you all day on all things nutrition. And again, that's an area with nutrition or an injury that I'll definitely be keeping on top of as well, because that's fascinating. So I'm hoping you're going to be putting up more stuff on that. For everyone that's listening, where can they pick up the book? I have it in front of me here, Eat Up the Next Level. Phenomenal stuff on mindset around food in the beginning. Some great recipes in here. It's a thick book. There's a lot in here. So much value for people. But tell them where's the best place for them to pick it up.
And just on that, I suppose the idea of the book is that you can read, cook, and learn. So the idea is that you can pick it up at any stage, and whether it be a recipe or you're feeling under the weather or you've got an injury, that there's a section that you can go to. And that's the idea. It's not like, you know, I'd like it to be something that will be and always be a really good resource. So I've got a big book launch in Tubbercurry at home in Sligo on the 28th of October, and the book is out then, and you'll be able to get it in all good bookstores and online as well. And just to say, the conversations are always absolutely fantastic. I love what you do. I'm very grateful for the little bit of help that you gave me as well offline and guidance and advice. And keep her lit and well done. Thank you.
Mate, pleasure is all mine. I absolutely love what you're doing, and the podcast will be out, the episode will be out the week the book is out, so everyone go pick it up. I will link it in the description below for Easton's Bookstation, Amazon for those of you listening in the UK, so you can pick it up. Daniel, keep doing what you're doing, and mate, I look forward to catching up again for round three real soon. There you have it, Daniel Davey on simplifying nutrition, avoiding diet over complication, and learning to eat out without guilt. Hopefully you enjoyed today's podcast as much as I enjoyed recording it. I love Daniel's content online, and I'm so glad when we get to have these catch-ups. We got to chat a little bit before we went on air and a little bit after, and he's just such an awesome dude. So I wish him the best of luck with his new book launch, Eat Up the Next Level. Go check it out. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to take a screenshot, pop it up on your Instagram. My handle is Brian_Keen_fitness, and Daniel's is Davey Nutrition on Instagram. That's all from me for this week. Catch you all next Monday.